the topic for the inaugural shiur, as it would be. I'll just start off with the question I got last week from a student, and I will explain why I chose this topic, and I think it's something that we all struggle with. So the topic is not this, but here's the question. Somebody asked me, a student, not a such a smart student, I'm sorry to report, so he says to me the following. His parents are going away for Thanksgiving. They're going to a place called Turks and Caicos. So apparently there's a new Zach that if you go to an island that nobody ever heard of, so like that's the new thing to do. So he went to this place. So it's the night before they're going, I guess it was Tuesday, it was in America, and he says, Rebbe, I approached my parents the night before we're going and said, what are we doing about food? And his parents are like, oh, we're so sorry, we didn't tell you. So he's expecting, you know, Noah's Ark or whatever, you know, they're bringing it. He said, the place is, you don't have to worry about it. He said, it's an all-inclusive meal plan. So he says, what does that mean? He said, oh, well, obviously we can't have things that aren't kosher, but we can have bread. All bread is kosher, obviously. And their salad, obviously, is kosher. And the fish, so we'll just... And he's going on and on about all the stuff. And, of course, the drinks are all kosher and so on and so forth. And the french fries. And he says to me, what should I do? Is this a problem? So I said, what do you... I don't even know what you're asking me. I said, bread is not kosher all over the world. That's not even all kosher in America. I said, and fish alakum, and who knows what the pie was used for before, and which fishes are they using, what oil, I mean, there's a gazillion problems. So I said, looks like, you know, you have to be on a salad diet, as long as you check the lettuce, you know. And it started to make me think about this concept of kind of living these two lives, of living a spiritual life, like when we're in shul, and maybe when we go to a good concert, or we go to a good tish, or an oneg, or maybe a good shiur. And then we have this other life, which is our work life, and our vacation life, which is even more extreme, maybe. And there, Hashem gives us like a pardon. He says, listen, you deserve to be on vacation every so often, and, you know, what are you going to do? And I think that this is obviously not a correct view to look at. And I explained this to him. He's a little bit too young to understand this, and how do you deal with your parents is a kibbutz avim issue. I get it. But this is not the first time I heard this idea, more from my friends, from people our similar ages, where they go on vacation, and all of a sudden you're like, wow. So it happens to be a few weeks ago, Rav Meir Tursky, the Rosh Hashiva in YU, gave a very short shiur. I assume he was giving it to the YU guys about vacations coming up. You got, you know, Thanksgiving, then you have midterms, finals, da-da-da, everybody's going away. So he says, what are your vacations going to look like? And I think that this is a big question. Baruch Hashem, I think we are, many of us here live in Eretz Yisrael, so... We all do it. So I think it's not as difficult if we're going to be here in Eretz Yisrael. But even that, to go to a place that... So my wife, unfortunately, knows how crazy I am, and in many ways. But one way she knows is I'm crazy about minyan. So no matter where we go, and we have not only traveled in Israel, but even in Israel, it's not so easy. We went last year for our anniversary. We went to Herzliya. We're like, Herzliya, of course you can find it. So I don't even know, like, how does a person go about finding a minyan in Herzliya? It sounds easy. I didn't know. So I started asking people. They were like, thought I was nuts. Ben Knesset, right? Right. So there's an app. There's an app called GPS. There's a GPS app, right? It's called Kosher GPS, and it's available, I think, everywhere in the world except for. It's the way I found that I work in New Jersey. I work in Totowa, New Jersey. So in Totowa, New Jersey, I looked it up, and it tells me that there's a place. There's this Hasidic place called Dvash Farms, which is a real interesting thing. It's a office of a Chol of Yisrael plant, but it's the office of it. Not the Chol of Yisrael milk, like it's not, but it smells, when you go there every Dar Mincha, it smells like milk. I can't figure out why. There's no milk there. Okay, it's the weirdest thing in the world. We dive in there, I said, where's the, I joke with them, I said, where's the milk? It smells terrible here. Anyway, I don't know why in Eretz Yisrael, maybe there is, I'm not aware of it. Maybe it's in Hebrew, so I get it. Anyway, so it took me a while. I went on this website, Kippah, and I found this and that. I called, and it was in a building, and they wouldn't let me in, and then it finally went in. So is that part? We say, no, I'm on vacation, I'm potter. And there are certain situations where you're potter. So I think that the ideal person to teach us this was Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, in last week's parsha, something very interesting happens. So on one hand, we know that all the Avos have are named after some sort of midah that defines who they are. So you have Avram Avinu's chesed, and Yitzhak Avinu is tferes, a gevura. And Yaakov is Emes. Everybody says, Emes is Emes Yaakov. And if I was to look at the person who is the least Emes at the stories that are told in Chazal, it's a Yaakov Avinu, right? And there's not just one story. So, first of all, he, quote-unquote, tricks his brother into selling the Bukhara, because he knows that he's really hungry, whatever that, you know, I'm telling kindergarten stories, now, I know, but that's not really what happened, but okay, fine. And then we learn the story that he tricks his father into the Bukhara, Yitzhak, the great, crazy. Then, in this week's parasha, we learn about Lavan, quote-unquote, he tricks Lavan. Ah, is this MS? So I think this is exactly what MS is. I think we don't understand what MS is. MS is MS, sometimes people think, that, oh, an MSistic person, a person who's really, so he has to be stepped all over, right? That's the guy, that's the Nebuch guy. He always is, you know, the word is Mevater, he's Mevater. He always, oh, it's not worth it, it's not worth it, it's not worth it, it's not worth it, right? And they tell great stories about the guy that's Mevater, right? I just heard a story about it. Someone was Mevater, and the greatest thing happened to him. I'll just tell you the story very quickly. I told it in lessons for the life. But I just heard this from Zolberstein. He said this last week in his weekly shiur. It's they have it online. I love Zolberstein. So he has this. He always gets the craziest story. I don't know why they call him with the stories, but they call him. So you have a guy, so he's telling the story of Nissen Karelitz, who was the great gadol. He just passed away about a month ago. He was a dayan in Bnei Brak, took over for the Chazon Ish. So he tells the following story, being Mevater. This is MS. So he says, I don't know if the story is MS, but this is the story. So a guy lives in an apartment house on the fourth floor, and in the ground floor there's different stores. So the store that's there is, it's a kid's store selling all different types of things, cribs and mattresses and strollers and so on. The guy has no room in his store. When he opens up, he puts all the stuff in the street. This guy goes by every day. He's got a little stroller also. He says, I can't get through. This is ridiculous. This is all totally awesome. You don't own the street. This is crazy. Guy's like, what do you want me to do? It's my parnasa. What am I going to do? He says, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'll take you to Din Torah. So he goes to the Dayan of Nissen Karelitz and he paskins and he says, you're 100% right. It's awesome. You can't make it a thoroughfare. You can't do this. It's also. But you should know that it's his parnasa. And sometimes being mevater, foregoing, it's not the worst thing in the world. So, as all great stories go, he is mevater. And he goes home to his wife and he says, what did Rav Nissen, what did he paskin, the great gadol? He said that I'm totally right. She said, ah, I knew it. Tell the guy to remove all the stuff. I said, yeah, but I'm being mevater. She's like, you being mevater? I'm shocked, you know? So my wife would probably say, you're just going to let it go. Fine. And as all good stories happen, a week later, his son is down on the fourth floor, as I told you. He somehow, some way, is able to break through the window guard. And he falls out of the window, Nebuch, on the fourth floor. And guess what he falls onto? A mattress. And he saves his life because he's mevater. What a great story. So they go to Rav Nissen Karelitz and says, you're a Baal Moises. What a great story. Nissen for the Floyds. He says, I'm not a Baal Moises. I'm a Nissen for the Floyds. It's because he was mevater. Because somebody gave up. But that's not a story that in business, the guy that gave up, because he gave everything away, he went into learning Torah. Oh, that's guy, wow. No. Right? Well, the guy that, you know, he's sitting in the circle all day letting people go. You know, he's mevater. That's not what he's talking about. So who was Yaakov? So it's so interesting about last week's parasha, and the Sfarno relates this. I spoke out last week this idea, the Sfarno and Rav Hirsch, and it's such a beautiful idea of what really happened. And as I said, unfortunately, we develop in our minds what we're taught in kindergarten and first grade, and we think those are the stories. That's it. There's nothing else that happened. But they're fascinating ideas. So Sfarno says, I'll tell you exactly what happened here. Yitzchak Avinu, and I always got this idea, it's just me, but I got the idea when I was in, in grade school that Yitzchak was blind, and blind people are stupid, so he was stupid, right? I'm not allowed to say that word in my house, but he was stupid. No S words in the house. So he was stupid, and what happened? He couldn't see, and he didn't know, you know, like, this is the image we get of this Yitzchak, and he didn't know who his son was. He didn't know Esav, he didn't know Yaakov, and Esav's scamming him to no end, and he's coming to him with great shilas, and he says, do you have to take meiser from salt? He says, what a great kasha, you know? Fine. So, and Yaakov, he knows who Yaakov is. He's sitting and learning Torah all the time. And he says, listen, let's be honest here. The guy that's sitting and learning Torah is great, but he's not going to lead an army, right? This guy's not going into the army. This guy's not going to be someone who's going to defend. It's not going to work. After all, Yitzchak is Gvura. So he's Mevater, and he says, I got to give it to Esav. And he shows, he's budding of something, right? It does teach us you should never give up on a child, and that's definitely true. and the Rivka comes. So a lot of people learn the story about Rivka, and they say, Nebuch, Rivka never really spoke to her husband, because he was so holy, which is true. The first time they ever met, he's sitting in Davin Mincha, there was no such thing as Mincha yet, so she must have been like, what's this guy doing? You know, he's still Suach Basadi, he was the first chassid. He's in the Sada, and he's davening, he's shuckling, he's obviously wearing a gartel and a strimel, right? And he's going crazy, and she can't talk to him. She's in awe. She falls on the ground. So the way that it goes is we think that they never spoke to each other ever. So that's not what Rav Hirsch says. They said, no, they spoke to each other. And Mrs. Sfarno says this as well. She said to him, what are you doing? Do you know who he is, Esav? He's a bad dude. He's a Rasha. Well, he's not such a Rasha. She says, I have a great idea. Chukei Lev says, I have a great idea. I'm going to do the following thing. We're going to have a split, right? Yisachar Zvulun. Until today, we have it, right? The bracha of Yisachar Zvulun, which Yaakov will later give, is Yisachar Ba'ohalecha, Zvulun B'Tseisecha. They had a business deal, a contract. They have today, they do this now. They have a contract. It's a very strange contract, but I've seen this. People who do this, rich people do this. You know, and you have these all these different types of people who are very wealthy. They don't have time to learn. So they make a deal, and they love this in Bnei Brak. They love this. They go into Yeshiva in Bnei Brak, the American guy wearing the, you know, the fancy shirt, and he goes in, he says, okay, I'm going to give you a deal. I'm going to pay you $100,000 a year, and I'm going to earn for you, and you're going to learn for me, right? So you have two separate things, learners and earners. It's a real thing. It's a contract. They do it today. It happens. It happens. I don't leave a Torah, but it happens. So it comes along. So right, it comes, right? So everybody's like, it's great, right? Because we're all, this is like perfect. We're in the generation of schoolers. We love schoolers. Right? We want to do one, put a red bendel on, and I don't have to worry about Einar. That's all I have to do, right? And that's what we think. We sign this copy of, I don't have to learn Torah anymore, right? If I could just find somebody to put my tefillin on, it'd be great. But that's what we think. Like, we love that. Put the key in the challah, I don't have to worry about pronouns. Like, Nebuch, that's the generation we live in. We're looking for very quick things. So Rivka comes to him. Rivka says to him, it's not true. He's tricking you. He's tricking you. It can't be. So she comes up with an idea. She says, if I can get Yaakov to trick Yitzchak, he'll realize that if the tzaddik can trick me, oh my God, I've been duped by Esau. Now the raya that Yitzchak had that this would work is because he could be a Rasha. He asked me a Shiloh, for example, about giving salt. Miser on salt, which shows what? He wants to give staka. So of course he's going to give staka to his brother Yaakov. It's such a great idea. No, it's a horrible idea. It's never going to happen. The test happens, and what happens? We all know, right? He tricks him. Hakokol Yaakov, he died to Esav. Maybe at that point he didn't do it. And then it says that what happened? He says, okay, you get the bracha. The Pesukim say that he knew what happened, and he says, okay, I get it. Yaakov, you can lead. You can be an earner and learner. I think about, I've told this over before, but Rav Yitzchak Cohen, he comes here once a year. He's going to come in a few weeks. He comes around this time of the year. So he's a Rosh Hashiva in YU now. He used to be an MTA. He's very, like, he's old school Musser. So I don't know if he gives it every year, but I've heard this in YU, he gives the same thing. The person thinks he could be a learner or an earner. He can't be both. He can't be both. He can't be both, right? And that's, we have this inculcated in our mind. And that's not true. Rav Schechter, he's just got a lot of publicity. Rav Schechter, I don't know if you saw this awesome post. I think I'm going to speak about it tomorrow on my short lessons from the late. But it's such a great, such a beautiful thing. Rav Schechter met Ari Lightstone, is the, what's it called? The chief of staff for David Friedman, the ambassador to Israel. So he's in America now. So they wanted to, Ari Lightstone's a Talmud of Rav Schechter. He says, I wanted to introduce him to my Rebbe. And anybody who knows Rav Schechter is very emotional. And he introduced him to him, and he couldn't. He wanted to just thank him for all the things he did. We don't, you know, whether you know this or not, all those great things Trump did is because David Friedman pushed him to do it. And Rav Schechter just started crying. He was crying. And he's crying because he was saying, who would ever think we would live in a generation, all these things would happen. He was tremendously emotional. That's Rav Schechter. And Rav Schechter has said many times, I have many students in my yeshiva, many students who were in my shir, who are now working, or bigger time to chacham than some of the Rosh Hashiva here. Okay, maybe he doesn't think they're such a good level, but whatever. So we see that Yaakov says, no, wait a minute, I want to be able to do both. And that's how the parsha starts. That's how our parsha starts. He has this dream, right? Let's understand what happened again. He's going from Be'er Sheva to Beit El, a nice distance. He passes by Makom HaMikdash, where Kedus Yitzhak was. And he goes, oh my God, I totally forgot. How can I not daven there? It's such a holy place. So he wants to go back, and says he has kfitas aderech, and actually the Har HaBayis comes to him, comes to Beit El, first time ever. And he falls asleep. The dream happens. Malachim olim v'yardim, a lot of different Torahs on that. He sees all the different generations and what will happen. He sees Malchus Yavon, and he sees Malchus Romi, and all these different things. And he sees there's going to be a Golos, and then there's going to be a Golos that we're going to be in today. He says, Ma Noira Malcham, he can't believe what we're going to have to go through. And in fact, there's a halacha that's related for this, which I actually follow, and I know the reason why I follow it. The halacha is that on Tisha B'Av, you're supposed to not have a pleasant sleep the night of Tisha B'Av. So some people actually sleep on the floor. So for many years, I used to sleep on the floor. Then when I started going to camp, when I you can't sleep on the floor in camp. This scares me.
No mattress?
Right.
No mattress?
No mattress. I sleep with no mattress. So on the floor, so when I was in America, I had carpet. So, that's my thing. So now I can't do that. So people say you should sleep with one less pillow. You should know it's Tisha B'Av. But one minhag that's quoted is that you should put rocks in your pillows. Rocks in your pillows should be so I thought it was because it should be uncomfortable. So I actually have this really strange minhag. I actually have a rock. I know, I'm sorry, it's crazy. I bring rock from Eretz Yisrael. Bring a rock from Eretz Yisrael, right? I pack it in my luggage. What do you have, rocks in there? Yeah, I have rocks. I pack a rock and I sleep on it. Says that the reason, based on this minhag, is actually these rocks. The rocks that Yaakov Avinu had, that he used, we know the famous story, right? There were 12 rocks he put around, maybe the Shvatim, they all come into one. That's what we're being mechaper on Tisha B'Av itself, that there's no achdus. And we take one of those rocks, and these were the rocks that he learned about the Chorban HaBayis, and he was in such a horrible mood. Let's remember who Yaakov is. Yaakov is the Gullus Av. He's the one who took us into Gullus. He's the one who we're most similar. We're called Yisrael after Yaakov. Is because he's the one that's going to go to Mitzrayim and begging to be buried back in Eretz Yisrael. But comes along the Baal HaTorim, and everybody knows the Baal HaTorim. The Baal HaTorim loves Rabbein Asher, loves gematrias and all these things. So this is what he writes. He says, Cholom, what's going on over here? Sulam, the gematria, kisei hakavod. Okay, the sulam, so this is what's going on over here. So it's mutzav arza, it's firmly on the ground, and it's going up, this is what he sees, it's going up to the Shamayim. So he says, Sulam is the gematria of Kisei HaKavod. Sulam is the gematria of Kol. Right? And he explains Kol Tfilah, v'chulah, v'chulah. Sulam gematria of Mammon and gematria of Oni. Sulam is the gematria of Kate. Sulam is the gematria of Sinai, v'chulah. So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik says, what is this going on over here? What is he talking about? what are we trying to get at here? What's happening over here? So he says the following thing. We would think that this sulam is antithetical to what Judaism is all about. Meaning, you're either hainu hach, you can't be in Shamayim and be in Aretz. Hashamayim, Shamayim, Lashem, the Aretz, the son of the Adam. You can't be both. Right? The physical and spiritual cannot combine. Says Yaakov Avinu, you're totally wrong. The Kisei HaKavod, which the sulam signifies, mixes with the Mammon. Right? To say, where do you think your spiritual life comes from? Same thing. Physical, spiritual, they come from the same thing. You're only rich or not rich or an ani because of the spiritual. And your progress in life, your mammon pursuit, and your secular knowledge is based on that. And if you have mammon, you have to give to the ani. You have a social responsibility, says Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, to give. But let's stop a moment, he says, Rav Aaron. And he says, we have to remember that above all is not just the physical pursuits, it's the kol. And that's the kol shel tefillah, kol kol Yaakov, and the kol shel Torah. And that's what gets us to the point of wanting to be involved in Torah, wanting to be involved in tefillah. And that's where a person should be. But equal should be that. I remember many years ago, I would say 22 years ago, actually around this time of the year, we went on our pilot trip to Israel. So we went to different schools to look at where was the right place for our children. And he ended up in this place called Ahava Yisrael. In those days, we called it Ahava Yisrael. And the Rapoport. And we met with Rabbi Sis at the time, was the Menahel. So Rabbi Sis, it wasn't so easy to understand him, because he's Sephardi, he was like, but we understood this line. And this is like really like, this was like one of those Aliyah experiences, like, wow. He says, everybody knows what the Gra says. We're like, yeah, of course. What does he say? Remind me. The Gra says that Torah is Kodesh Kedoshim. But Chol is Kodesh. He says, we believe that they're both equally true. I mean, that really was true in the school. But right, we believe they're equally important. Right? That's what you want in life, to believe that secular studies and Torah studies, one's Kodesh Kedoshim. There's no question about it, but one's Kodesh. the Haraya in some schools they have, you know, they'll say on Friday, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Friday they're just going to learn Torah, right? Because, okay, Torah is the ikker, but secular studies is just an important. We're not gonna go ahead and say, well, come on, it's just, you know, back in my day, they used to have the, in New York, the regions. The regions, so we'll just give you the answers, because it's not important. That's a guy you should learn it. No. They're both equally important. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik has a whole essay in his other sefer, Logic of the Mind, Logic of Heart, on Torah Mada, where he defends Torah Mada. And he gives all these examples, just makes me know, you know, how little I know in Torah, of examples of, if you didn't know science, if you don't know mathematics, if you don't know the human body, if you don't know the animal, you can't learn Gemara. He says, how can anybody say you can't get a secular education? How are you going to know anything? It's ridiculous. So that's the idea. And who does this the best? Love him. And this is the greatest story. I don't understand it 100%, but just listen. I'll explain it the way I understand it. So Lovin's a real wheeler dealer, right? I like to call him Whitey. He's nothing but white. He's slippery, and he calls and he goes, oh, you want to marry my daughters? So here's the story, right? And he says, and he makes the trick, and he says, here's the thing. I'm going to give you, you're going to be a shepherd, and I'm giving you payment for the shepherd. I'm going to keep the speckled ones. You're going to keep the unspeckled ones. You'll get all the speckled ones. Impossible. There's no such thing. There's no way, we think logically, that if you have unspeckled sheep, they're going to become speckled. So it's a joke. He's going to get all the profits. So Yaakov Avinu is Yaakov Avinu, and he comes up with this great trick where he goes ahead and he puts speckles on them, he paints on them through roots and trees and whatever, and he paints speckles. They see that in the image, and he's able all of a sudden to have these speckled animals. So where did he get this idea? So the Midrash says that at this point in his life, there was a malach that Hashem sent to help him. So the Midrash says, we think the word malach obviously means Hashem's messenger, meaning one of the malachim. He says, no, it means a messenger. A physical guy came to him and he says, shh, I want to teach you something. It's called Mendelian science, based on Mendel's theory of science. I don't understand anything what I'm about to say. So he says, this is Rav Aaron. Rav Aaron knew every, I was in Rav Aaron's Salvation Shir. I'm speaking of Rav Aaron. So Rav Aaron was a genius in so many, it was crazy things that he would bring into Shir sometimes, and we'd be like, okay, whatever. You know, we would be these guys in college. I mean, just so much so, I just want to tell you that I had the schuss. I was by far the youngest person in Shir. This year, when I went into Shir, I was, you know, let's say 20 years old. Everybody was like 40 years old. So Rav Aaron would always be machmid to stop 3 o'clock with secular classes. He would stop secular classes. I was the only person in Shir that anybody would go, and he'd say, Dov has to go to Shir. My Hebrew name is Dov, by the way. He says, Dov has to go to Shir. He says, we have to stop in Davar Minchana. Right? So I would often lie and say, oh, Rebbe, I don't have class. And, you know, like I try to say, oh, 4 o'clock, you can keep going. He goes, Rav, he just gives cheer for like 2.5 hours. But if I would always bring in things, in fact, he was the only Rosh Hashiva, he insisted on having cable TV in his apartment. Because he said, I have to watch the news, I have to know what's going on. My first job, I worked in the Ministry of Defense. So I was going for Smicha, I was in the Ministry of Defense. He didn't understand what that meant. He thought I was like really important in the Ministry of Defense. So he used to ask me, he says, no, what is Bibi saying? What's going on now? You know, Bibi's been Prime Minister that long. Says, what is he saying? Right? What's going on? Just to tell you off story, just to totally embarrass me, he says to me once, there was some Nebuch things going on in Eretz Yisrael with Hebron, they're giving back Hebron. He got very upset. He says, Dov, I want you to make a meeting between me and the Prime Minister. So this is when we know that Hartzim doesn't know anything. So I'm like, okay, we learn, you have to do Hashtadlis. So I go to my boss and I'm like, listen, I'm just telling you because like I gotta tell somebody. I wanna say, I don't wanna lie, I wanna say Rav Aaron, I tried. So I said, yeah, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, he's the son of Rav Yosef Dov. He goes, ooh, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, of course I know Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Let me make a call for you. He makes a call, second call, whatever. That's it, I totally forgot about it. I get a call. And I pick up the phone, hi, you know, and the guy's like, shalom, on the, you know, something for the Rosh Memshalah. I was like, oh, I said, who is this? Is this my friend Ronnie? Who is this? This is it. And the guy's like, this is not a joke. This is like, shoot. it was like the secretary of Netanyahu. And he said, I heard Rav Aaron Soloveitchik wants to meet with me. And I'm like, I totally think this is like back in the PLJ prank days, you know, like, I'm like, come on. And the guy's like, you don't. So then the guy got upset with me. He's like, okay, so call me back. Here's my number. And I'm like, no, okay, fine. And even Netanyahu, I don't know how this all happened and transpired. And he said he's only in this trip. He was only going to be in Washington. So he said he'll meet him in Washington. I called the Rebbe, and the Rebbe's like, I can't have him. You know, Rav Aaron was paralyzed the left side of his body. Can't travel all the way to Washington, but thank you so much. Whatever. The next day, when we had Shear. So Rav Aaron's like, I told you could do it. And I was like, Rebbe, I can't get people to, I don't know how it worked. So Rav Aaron is very into this. So Rav Aaron knew a lot of things about science. So he explained that there are two forms. There is two theories in science. One's called Lemarck theory. Lemarck was, his theory was, is that you can't change the results of your DNA, right? Your father's a robber, you're going to be a robber. You can't change your DNA. So therefore, if you're speckled, you will always be speckled. And that's antithetical to Judaism, because what does it teach us? It teaches us that you can't change. You can't do tshuva. Because, right, this is like, you know, in our generation now, Nebuch, we should know from this, like, kids are now using this and saying, you know, my father's crazy, so, you know, I need extra points on my test, you know? Like, that's what happens. But we don't believe that. Mendel believed differently. He said, no, you are what you make yourself. You believe you're speckled, you can be speckled. Okay, let's not take it to the extreme. If you believe you're a boy, you're not a boy. Okay, fine. But that's what he believed. He believed in the ability of saying, it doesn't matter what my parents were. It doesn't matter what my grandparents were. I can be the Sulam and Mutzav Arza and say, no, I want something different. V'haraya, take Eliezer. Eliezer came from the cursed son of Noach, Cham. Noach cursed him. But he became a pretty good person. And obviously there are many different examples of people who were, right? Let's take Ruth. V'chulu v'chulu, David HaMelech comes from that. So he believed in that, and therefore he learned based on this science of Mendel that he was able to make them speckled, they became speckled, v'chulu v'chulu. That's the ikar, I think, in understanding what our life is supposed to be about. Our life is supposed to be about doing the right thing, but combining both. There is a famous article, if you will, I don't know if it's an article, but in the Pachad Yitzchak of Rav Huttner. So Rav Huttner writes this awesome question that a Talmud asked. Rav Huttner was the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas, apropos that I'm using his name, because he was Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's, when Rav Aaron Soloveitchik came to America, so his father wasn't there yet, and he taught him Torah. Rav Huttner taught him Torah. Rav Victor Miller, the famous Rav Victor Miller, taught him English. Rav Victor Miller went to MDH, don't tell anybody. He taught him English. So he says, nobody wants to tell him. But Rav Huttner, so Rav Huttner actually gave Rav Aaron his first shot. Rav Aaron believed, and he said this to me, I remember, he said to me, we were talking about going for smicha. I didn't think I should go for smicha. And Rav Aaron said, you should go for smicha. I'll give you private smicha. And he says, but I want you to have a job. So I don't want you to go for YU smicha. Go get a job. You need to have a job. You need to have a parnasa. Rav Aaron went to law school, NYU law school. He was a lawyer. He never practiced. He didn't have to practice, Baruch Hashem. But he was afraid. So Rav Huttner gave him a job. So this Rav Huttner, so he tells a story here, a letter that's written in Pachad Yitzchak, in his letters in the back. And he says like this. The guy asks him the following question. He says, Rebbe, you told me, you know, it's time for me to leave yeshiva and get a real job. Right? So I got a real job. But he says, I don't understand. He says, how could you tell me to do this? I'm living a double life. He says, I have a secular career, and that's called a double life. Harshon klali hamit kabel bidvarav. He says, so he answers him and he says, what are you talking about? I can't accept the premise that a secular life is a double life. Lumutulani, do you think I would let you leave the yeshiva if I thought you could live a double life? Let me tell you what a double life is. Hasoicher bias lichyotcham bein toshav, right? I have two houses, right? I say I have a guy who lives in America and he lives in Israel. Right, every 2 weeks he goes to, every month he goes to America. I'm just giving him an example of somebody I know. Right? So he's got his American family and his Israeli family. That's double life, right? Right? His family in America says, oh, Abba, you're finally home. It's so great. It's not nice to see you. And then you come back to, oh, Abba, you're fine. That's living a double life. That's a double life, he writes. This is not a double life. To go out to the work career and to say, wow, I really have my challenges now. This is not the base medrash. Oh my God. I have things I have to do about yichud, and I have something called ribbis, and I got all these halachas I got to follow now. Ooh, I got to ask a rabbi. This is not so pasha. And he tells a beautiful, oh, and then he writes, this is the word. He says, Zelo nikra double life, zen nikra broad life. You have a broad life. You have a real life. Right? You're not some rabbi sitting in a base medrash. It's great. It's wonderful. And there's a lot of people like that, and that's, but they're not living a broad life because they're not, they have no interaction with the secular world. He tells the following story. He says, I was with a tzaddik gadol miYerushalayim, and I was, both of us were jealous about this following story. He tells the story about Dr. Wallach. Dr. Wallach was one of the founders of Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. And when Dr. Wallach, before surgery, he would go up to the patient and he would say to the patient, please give me your name and your mother's name. And the patient said, why would you want my name and my mother's name? He said, because I've never done surgery before. No, I'm scared. No, he said, it's not Ani Hashem Rofecha. God is sending me as a messenger. I want to daven for you first. He says, that's bringing your secular life into your religious life. That's living a real life. A guy that has a shiur at work, a guy that goes to minchas and say, this is the time of the year. I tell my students this all the time. This is it. This is the challenge of the year. 420 mincha? How can you work? I have a job. So the guy's going to, even for a guy to daven, even if he daven's in a place where there's no mincha, for him to go out of the meeting and daven mincha, it's hard. That's the challenge. That's actually the Yitzhak Avinu challenge. It's the challenge of living the life and saying, no, I'm going to bring holiness into it. That's hard. That's exactly, I think, what this point is. I think that's what we're trying to get at when we talk about these different inyanim. Yaakov Avinu represented living both lives and saying to yourself, you know what? Yeah, guess what? I can live both lives and I can go on a vacation to a place that's mutter. I don't have to go to a place that's, again, and I'm not, you have to ask your Rav this question. I've dealt with this question myself, personally. I had a machlekes with my wife. You should never have a machlekes with your wife. There's no women here tonight, so I could say this. And my wife, one time, she decided, we used to go on vacation to, like, loser places, like Florida, because it was a minion. So, and food. Food was the second most important thing to me. Since she was like, it's getting, like, annoying. I want to go on a real trip. I want to go somewhere, like, nobody knows us. I'm like, okay. So, she's like, I think you should call your Rav. So, I called my Rav, Rabbi Neuberger, and Rabbi Neuberger said to me, I don't see what the problem is. He says, Shabbos, I understand you want to daven with the minyan, but during the week, your wife wants to go away once in your life. Okay, go. Obviously, you're going to bring kosher world things. So we brought all of our food from Noah's Ark and packed up, and it was an amazing vacation. And there, yes, it's true, there was no minyan there. We went to a shul that was, there was in Mexico, we went to a shul that was functioning only during times that the Syrians from Brooklyn wanted to go there, right? There was a mikveh there. They got everything there except for, right? And then it was actually funny because there's actually a hashkach. There's different hashkachas there. So they actually, we went to the, there's a Walmart there. So we went to the Walmart and we saw all this kosher. I was like so excited because we had like minimal amount of food. And it was like, great. We saw ice cream and potato chips. And I was my wife didn't care. She's just having vegetables. But that's, so sometimes, yeah, you have to ask a shiloh. Don't get me wrong. But sometimes you say, what are we doing this for? I'm going on this trip, I'm going to go, and that's crazy, right? And there's a lot of cases where we could, if we're true with ourselves, we'll admit to ourselves, you know what? I did kind of give in here, right? I'll just tell one last story. My sister told me a story a number of years ago. She went on a cruise. It was a very convenient cruise. It was during winter vacation, and it left from, I never knew there was such a thing, but it left from New York, and the boat goes to Miami, and then to Miami, to all the islands. It's like a perfect trip for someone who doesn't want to spend too much money and have a good time. So this trip was not a kosher cruise. So my sister went with my cousin, and they had exactly 10 men, or something close to more than 10 men, whatever, 15 men. They got a Torah. They were all set up. And they all brought, you know, the whatever the food, you know, the Weberman, whatever the food you bring from, you know, fine. And so they get on the boat, and the first day they go to with their little makeshift minion. It's not an exaggeration. And 80 people show up for minion. So here's my cousin and my brother. They're like these modern Orthodox guys from Teaneck, and they're like Hasidim are there. They're like, how did you know we were going to bring a Torah? Somebody would bring a Torah. We knew. Why wouldn't there be a Torah? Somebody would have it. So now they realize there's a lot of from people, so they, you know, they start eating together at the meal, so on and so forth. And then people start asking the famous shilohs, what about, you know, what's the story with the ice cream? What's the story with this? Because everything's your bracelet. You can buy a bracelet and get this. All of a sudden, this guy gets up, a firm-looking gentleman, and he goes, I have a wonderful announcement for everybody. This is amazing. He said, I just negotiated, because there's so many from people on the boat, with the Fry House. And the Fry House has dedicated to us a new fryer that's only going to be used to fry French fries, which is unlimited. And the oil, I've checked, it's kosher muhuder, and the French fries have a big OU on them. Enjoy, everybody. You're shkoyach. And everybody's like the Titanic. Everybody's going crazy. You know? And my sister's like, this doesn't sound right. This doesn't sound good. So she goes to the Fry House, and kamuvan, every single Jew is waiting online to get their fries. And my sister asked the guy, and she says, I don't mean to be, you know, asked. She says, yes, everything's kosher. The next person to ask, everybody's asking the oil. She wants me to show you the oil, I'll show you the oil. She says, okay, but when the fry house closes at 5 o'clock, what do you do with the fry? You just put it away. She's like, no, we don't put it away. We bring it into the dinner room so that we can fry schnitzel with it. Straight schnitzel. Right? So that's this compromise of saying, well, maybe, who knows? And again, there are coolers. Please don't get me wrong. I have a whole shiur I give on popcorn in a movie theater. And, you know, this place is really open Shabbos, but we know and we trust him. Okay. And there's, you know, a cholin place here that doesn't have hashgacha. You know, okay. But the question is, do we live this double life or not? Do we sometimes just say, Hashem, you stay here in the base medrash, and I'm going to go do what I want, and then let's not meet, but I'm going to give a lot of money just talk, just don't say anything. That's not what Yaakov represented. Yaakov said, yeah, you could be a real businessman. Look what Yaakov became. The greatest learner ever. Look how long he learned and sat and learned Torah, sitting in shame of Eivor, and he was a businessman. Shein kamo. He was a rich businessman. Why can't the two ever meet? So I think that the answer is they can, they should meet, and that's one of the challenges that we face in life, I think, and something that in Mirtz Hashem we could accomplish together in realizing that we could be Yaakov Avinu Jews. Shkoyach, thanks for listening.